headlines this hour. Mounting political tensions in the U.S. House of Representatives in their move to impeach President Trump on charges of inciting his supporters to storm the Capitol. The Iranian Navy launches its largest and domestically built military vessel during a maritime missile drill. And the World Health Organization says a more contagious coronavirus variant initially found in Britain has now spread to 50 countries and territories. Thanks for joining us. The U.S. House of Representatives is debating whether to impeach Donald Trump, making him the first president in the country's history to face impeachment twice. Impeachment over the charge of inciting insurrection on the Capitol is expected to pass the Democratic-held lower chamber of commerce. For Congress, at least five Republicans have signaled their support for the motion as well. The vote comes one day after the House voted in favor of the resolution urging the VP Pence to invoke the Constitution's 25th Amendment and to strip Trump of his powers. Pence refused to comply, arguing the move is not in the best interests of the U.S. Donald Trump has faced backlash since his supporters stormed the Capitol building last Wednesday. Five people died in the violent riots, including a law enforcement officer. International lawyer Edward Corrigan on that issue or topic has said that the U.S. House will definitely pass the impeachment vote against President Trump.
Well, I think the impeachment vote will definitely pass at the House of Representatives because the Democrats have a narrow majority there, but there's an indication of a number of Republicans that are going to join them. Mm. The Senate, the Republicans still have a majority until there's the transfer of power on January 20th, and then it'll be tied, and then Vice President will have the tie-breaking vote. Mm. But there's some people, one senator for Alaska, Lisa McCroskey, said that she doesn't see herself as a Republican under the Trump administration. And Trump really has a cult, and he has done a tremendous amount of damage. And he's trying to just, you know, sort of have a total reign of destruction for the last couple of weeks of his power. And this is unprecedented. People were afraid that Richard Nixon might break before he resigned with the impeachment thing with Watergate and whatever. Right. But he did resign. He was pressured into that. Mm-hmm. But people were afraid that he was becoming mentally unstable. And I think the same concerns actually are even larger with Donald Trump.
U.S. National Guard troops deployed on the streets of the Capitol, Washington, D.C., have been allowed to carry weapons. The Guard soldiers were also authorized to make arrests if the situation got out of hand. Now that's according to the Pentagon National Guard Bureau Chief. Daniel Kanson, however, said it would be a last resort. U.S. officials are boosting security ahead of the inauguration of Joe Biden as president on January 20th. It comes in the wake of the last week breach of Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. Five people were killed as a result. The FBI has warned of armed protests at all 50 state capitals and in Washington before Inauguration Day. Prominent human rights organization says U.S. President-elect Joe Biden should allow the prosecution of his predecessor Donald Trump for alleged crimes.
For Biden, the big question is prosecution. And our message to Biden is to not repeat Obama's mistake of looking forward, not back. That's what Obama said with respect to Bush torture. And as a result, left torture is a policy option rather than a despicable crime. Biden needs to allow professional prosecutors to go forward and to prosecute whatever crimes took place.
Roth also said that Biden, after taking office, should not stand in the way of professional prosecutors wanting to hold Trump accountable for crimes. HRW executive director also underlined that Trump has been a disaster for human rights both in the U.S. and abroad during his tenure as president. The remarks follow an annual HRW report over rights abuses around the world. The report was published just days after Trump's supporters carried out a deadly siege of the U.S. Congress. Biden is scheduled to be sworn in as the 46th president of the U.S. on January 20th. The Iranian Navy has launched its biggest ever military vessel built domestically for large-scale logistics movements.
Macron Expeditionary Transfer Dock is a valuable floating naval base for expanding and deepening support for the Islamic Republic of Iran's operations at high seas. Building such valuable vessels indicates that Iran's defense industry and factories of the Iranian Navy have successfully bypassed sanctions of the enemy. They manufacture the most effective weapons and equipment, launch them and make the best use of them for accomplishing missions while the sanctions are at their peak.
The mobile base ship joined the Navy in the presence of Major General Dafferty on the first day of a maritime drill in the Sea of Oman. She is named Makran after a southern Iranian coastal stretch and is capable of carrying 7 helicopters on her deck. The ship will support Iranian naval fleets in the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the Bab el-Mandab Strait, and the Red Sea. The Iranian Navy also received the missile destroyer called Zereh, meaning armor. Spokesperson for Iran's naval maneuvers says the drills are featuring operations by rapid reaction forces, among other things.
We had a rapid reaction by the forces. They entered the area. The region had the area of over 600,000, and we also had land-to-sea missiles being used in the course of the drills. So the naval units, including surface and subsurface units, were deployed to the designated zones, and we are getting prepared to carry out the other stages of the drills. The measures in this stage of the drills have not been pre-planned, and also the joining of the two vessels that, and you have seen them. We had the Zereh missile launcher vessel, and also a new warship that are going to be used in order to support our naval fleet and our intelligence operational units in northern part of the Indian Ocean.
The senior advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the U.S. must lift anti-Iran sanctions if it wants to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ali Akbar Velayati said the incoming U.S. administration should make up for past mistakes by removing the sanctions. He said that with this way, the new American administration will prove that it is committed to its obligations under the Iran nuclear deal. The outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew his country from the accord in 2018, reimposing sanctions on Iran. Trump also launched a so-called maximum pressure campaign that has resulted in extra sanctions against Tehran. Iranian officials say that the measures are directly targeting ordinary people. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic will pursue the case of the U.S. assassination of the country's top general, Qasem Soleimani, through courts in Iran and in Iraq. Mohammad Javad Zarif also touched upon an arrest warrant issued by an Iraqi court for President Donald Trump for ordering the assassination of senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. He said that the verdict was issued in the wake of a follow-up by Iran's foreign ministry. A U.S. drone strike killed General Soleimani and Muhandis near Baghdad airport last January. Iran has requested the Interpol to arrest Trump and 47 other American officials identified as playing a role in Soleimani's murder. The United Arab Emirates flag carrier has suspended a Tunisian pilot for refusing to fly a plane to Israel. Tunisian pilot Monem Sahib Al-Taba wrote on his Facebook page that Emirates Airline suspended him because he refused to fly to Tel Aviv. He is to be introduced to the disciplinary committee. Arab activists condemned the suspension and praised Al-Taba for his, quote, heroic stance and his refusal to recognize the Israeli regime. Back in September, Israeli Airlines began operating direct flights between Tel Aviv and Dubai after the UAE signed an agreement to normalize diplomatic relations with Israel. Many countries and Palestinians have condemned the normalization deal between Abu Dhabi and Tel Aviv. The World Health Organization says the COVID-19 variant initially found in Britain has now spread to 50 countries and territories. The UN health body also said that a similar strain identified in South Africa has now been found in 20 countries and areas. According to the WHO, the geographical spread of both variants was likely underestimated. The agency warned that people must expect more such variants with the growing pace of the coronavirus. According to British health officials, the variant is up to 70% more transmissible than earlier versions. So far, many nations worldwide have imposed travel bans on Britain to control the spread of the new strain. Daily COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. meanwhile have hit a new record with nearly 4,500 fatalities. According to data released by Johns Hopkins University, cumulative deaths in the world's worst-hit country have now surpassed 380,000. The average number of daily deaths in the past week has now surpassed the fatalities of the 9/11 attack. The U.S. has also so far registered more than 22.8 million cases of the virus. Over the past week, an average of nearly 249,000 new COVID-19 infections was reported every day. Vaccination is also underway in the country, but the government has come under criticism for the program's slow and chaotic process. COVID-19 vaccine jointly produced by American drug maker Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech has seemingly failed to protect people, as many across the world are experiencing allergic reactions to the inoculation. However, the U.S. is not the only country striving to find a cure to the pandemic. Despite Washington's eagerness to keep its dominance on even the basic medical needs of the people, sanctioned hit Iran has come up with its own vaccine.
As the coronavirus pandemic continues to wreak havoc across the globe, a number of pharmaceutical companies have come up with vaccines to curb the deadly disease. That includes America's Pfizer and Moderna, with both manufacturing billions of doses and claiming the success rate of their vaccine over 90% to protect people from being infected. Many countries around the world signed mega contracts with these two drug makers, while many others, including the US, the UK, Bulgaria, and Portugal, started the mass vaccination to their populations. But reports coming out of these countries indicate Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines have so far failed to secure people against COVID-19. From Britain's National Health Service staff to health workers in Portugal, as well as other ordinary people in numerous nations, many have suffered allergic reactions, including mild or moderate side effects, after the Pfizer vaccine rollout. Some others have even suffered life-threatening reactions after receiving the first dose. This has been to the extent that several health regulators were forced to issue stern warnings, saying those with a history of significant allergic reactions should not currently receive the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine. Observers believe the American vaccines are not a safe and effective option to deal with the deadly disease.
Based on the mixed track record so far of both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, it's not clear the extent to which, if at all, that these vaccines have been successful in protecting people's lives. What is clear is that the United States government has once again been successful in protecting corporate profit, in this case, the profit of the pharmaceutical industries, which it demonstrates once again to be more important to it than human life, unfortunately.
Given the failure of such companies and their products in saving people's lives, questions arise as to why the United States and other Western countries limit their funds to developing the inoculation to only a few firms, namely Pfizer and Moderna.
Well, Pfizer and Moderna are the two American pharmaceutical firms with massive private and public funds that enabled them to produce the inoculation. According to statistics, their success rate has not been up to the mark, with reports of side effects. One report suggests that some are unable to form normal daily activities and are unable to work after the vaccination. Yet, there is another sad reality behind the vaccine rollout. Many developing nations are not receiving the vaccines, which were first distributed among Western countries. Ironically, some that have no vaccines or access to it is basically due to the U.S. sanctions that are being forced to develop, in this case their own, like the Islamic Republic of Iran.
While many countries are importing vaccines to bring the pandemic under control, Iran has come up with its own domestically produced COVID-19 inoculation thanks to U.S. maximum pressure policy.
In late December, Iranian authorities announced that they were testing the vaccine on humans after completing its initial steps, including tests on animals and obtaining necessary approvals. But while many people are gradually receiving the Coviran Batikat vaccine for a test, authorities are critical of Washington for hindering the country's efforts to get access to much-needed medical equipment and medicines. In a letter to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, head of Iran's Academy of Medical Sciences, Said Alireza Marandi lashed out at the U.S., saying the debilitating sanctions have been imposed on Iran for decades, since the time of Iraqi former dictator Saddam Hussein until the pandemic today. Marandi said there has been no respite for the Iranian people, who continue to endure what he called brutal sanctions that deprive them of pharmaceutical materials and medical equipment. The Iranian official also slammed the international community for what he described as complete silence from Western-funded human rights organizations and international bodies who should be demanding Iranian access to medical relief during the pandemic. Many believe the silence of the international community comes from their fear and vassalage.
I think the silence of the international community is really born out of two things, and one would be fear, and the other would be essentially vassalage status, and they go hand in hand. The fear is of American secondary sanctions, the extraterritorial sanctions, which indeed do threaten foreign businesses. And so this is a financial threat, but the vassalage status that much of the world has participated in and maintained since the Second World War, and especially the European countries, has unfortunately prohibited them from taking either individual or group action to buck these illegal sanctions of the United States. And so it comes down to fear and vassalage.
The silence of the international community comes as food and medicine should be exempted from U.S. sanctions on Iran. But the U.S.'s obstruction of Iranians' access to their medical requirements raises the question as to who is Washington really targeting by exerting its maximum pressure policy.
The main target, as well as the main victims of American sanctions against Iran, are the Iranian people. And the Iranian people have been explicitly targeted, for example, by Mike Pompeo, who made the threat that if Iranians want to eat, they will follow his 12-point plan for the complete relinquishing of sovereignty and national rights. This action in threatening and indeed blocking food and medicine to achieve a political purpose to get a population to engage in what is called regime change against its own government, this is, by any definition, terrorism. The effort to motivate a population to do something based on fear or terror. And so the Iranian people have been the primary target of this maximum pressure campaign, and the Iranian people ultimately have stood up to maintain their sovereignty and their rights in the face of this economic and medical terrorism.
But with the U.S. measures still in place and Washington showing no intention to lift them, it is for the Iranians to stand on their own feet and protect themselves against the coronavirus pandemic as well as the U.S. sanctions.
And that is World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight. Despite a purported satisfactory performance last week, shares in the London Stock Exchange still have some way to go before they reach their pre-crisis level. Here, the asset class that has defied the depressed state of the economy and the health emergency is residential property. Stay with us for an article written by Larry Elliott. The piece is titled, Are Soaring Markets and House Prices an Epic Bubble About to Pop? The article has been taken from the British newspaper The Guardian. Stay with us for more of Larry Elliott's article. There was plenty of bad news in America last week. A mob of U.S. President Donald Trump's supporters stormed the Capitol building. The number of new COVID-19 infections hit a record high, and employment fell by 140,000. None of it fazed Wall Street, though, which continued to climb to dizzying new heights. That's the way with financial markets. When they're in the sort of mood, they go up when the news is good. And they go up when the news is bad. Last week's disappointing jobs report was a case in point. The fact that businesses had been shedding labor meant Joe Biden would have even more of an incentive to deliver an expansionary tax and spending package soon after he becomes president on 20th of January. The loss of jobs in the eyes of Wall Street was not a bad thing at all. Rather, it was a reason to continue buying into a stock market that is higher than it was before the coronavirus pandemic began. Despite a purported satisfactory performance last week, shares in the London Stock Exchange still have some way to go before they reach their pre-crisis level. Here, the asset class that has defied the depressed state of the economy and the health emergency is residential property. According to the latest data, from the Halifax Building Society, the cost of the average house rose by 6% in 2020, an annual rate of increase normally associated with a growing economy, not one that has just seen its biggest decline since the Great Frost of 1709. We'll be right back.
There are some specific reasons why house prices are going up in the United Kingdom. UK Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak's temporary stamp duty holiday is one. The desire for houses with a bit more space and a garden is another. The fact that many people can afford to buy a more expensive home because they have saved money whilst working from home is a third reason. But what links rising share prices in the United States and rising house prices in the United Kingdom is money creation by central banks. Both the US Federal Reserve in Washington and the Bank of England in London have ramped up their quantitative easing programs, under which the central banks buy financial assets, usually government bonds, in exchange for cash. In theory, the newly created money could fund new productive investment for companies eager to expand. But in reality, much of it has been lent for speculative activity of one sort or another. There is no real mystery about this. It happened after the financial crisis of 2008, and it is happening now. The major central banks say they had no choice because the alternative would have been a financial meltdown that would have made last year's economic collapse even worse than it was. Their critics say quantitative easing, as currently designed, widens the gap between the rich and the poor, fails to put money into the bits of the economy that really need it, and has led to the creation of colossal bubbles that are bound to burst eventually. Those who remain bullish about share prices say fears of a crash are misplaced. The global economy is going to recover quickly as soon as mass vaccination programs get on top of the coronavirus pandemic. Yet even strong growth will not force central banks and finance ministers to withdraw the extraordinary amount of stimulus they have been providing because inflation will remain low. These two factors, a period of rapid catch-up and a benign policy stance, will boost corporate profits and so justify risking stock market valuations. But not everybody is convinced. The veteran British financier Jeremy Grantham, who co-founded the US investment firm GMO, fired off a warning to the company's clients recently. Jeremy Grantham did not pull his punches. He said, "The long, long bull market since 2009 has finally matured into a fully-fledged epic bubble," he added, "featuring extreme overvaluation, explosive price increases, frenzied issuance, and historically speculative investor behavior. I believe this event will be recorded as one of the greatest bubbles of financial history, right along with the South Sea bubble in 1929 and in 2000. For Jeremy Grantham, Tesla is the stock that proves the market has taken leave of its senses. The current market capitalization of $600 billion amounts to $1.25 million for each electric car sold, compared with $9,000 a car for General Motors. He asks, what has 1929 got to equal that? The assumption on Wall Street is that the US Federal Reserve will always stand behind the market. If prices fall precipitously, investors can sleep easy knowing that the chairman of the US Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, and his colleagues will do what's necessary to limit losses and get the market rising again. Jeremy Grantham says this is wrong. He believes this bubble will burst in due time, no matter how hard the US Federal Reserve tries to support it, with consequent damaging effects on the economy and on portfolios. It's not all that hard to see the circumstances in which Jeremy Grantham could be proved right. There is a logical inconsistency in Wall Street's belief that it will do business as usual for the US once enough Americans have had their COVID jabs, and its conviction that monetary policy will remain as loose as it currently is. fresh dollops of stimulus might not actually be needed at a time when demand is going to be picking up anyway. Inflationary pressure is currently weak, but were that to change, the mood in the markets could also change quickly. The yield or interest rate on government bonds would start to rise, and share prices would start to fall. Wall Street would be begging the US Federal Reserve to come to its rescue, but with inflation rising, it might feel uneasy about doing so. Will this happen? Who knows? But the financial markets are placing a lot of trust in the US Federal Reserve and the other central banks. It had better not be misplaced.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Inside Israel.
Israel is ever closer to another election. It would be the fourth one in 2 years. A preliminary date has been set for March 16, 2021. A majority of Israeli lawmakers voted to dissolve parliament in a preliminary reading.
Unfortunately, and I'm saying the truth, Benny Gantz reneged on the agreements between us. And this decision is dragging the state of Israel into elections. And I think it happened, and this isn't a secret, because of an internal fight in his party. He reneged because of his insistence to continue giving Nissenkorn, against the coalition agreement, to advance a dictatorship of left-wing bureaucrats. And these bureaucrats are ruining the will of the people.
This brings Israel closer to its fourth round of elections in 2 years. Disagreements over the 2020 budget have caused the latest political turmoil. The main issue is that the Israeli coalition cabinet can't really agree on anything. Israeli ministers accuse Israel's prime minister of lying and sidelining his demands, in particular, a proposed budget, the same budget that hasn't been passed. Another election means Israelis have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars for it. Israel's elections are costly. They run upwards of $400 million per election. About 30% of that money, according to Channel 12, will go to party funding. Another 20% will go to party member loans. Israel has had three so far in less than 2 years. According to the Manufacturers Association of Israel, the latest three elections cost Israelis $3.8 billion. This calculation factors in the expense of election days that require businesses to close for the day. In Israel, any election day is a national holiday to facilitate voting. If businesses still open, according to the Israeli law, they need to pay their employees 200% of their normal salary for the day. The Calculation Manufacturers Association of Israel also includes party campaign budgets funded by Israel and the cost of operating the Central Elections Committee, which oversees the electoral process. Furthermore, with caretaker cabinets in place since December 2018, Israel's economic policies have been on hold, while the debt increased and costs continued. Costs incurred by the ongoing political maneuvering and ultimate stalemate that exist following the latest election results may be compounded by yet another election soon. The lack of a budget law has hurt the most vulnerable worst of all. The lack of a state budget has left working parents, especially lower-income ones, with no immediate solutions to the problem.
You know, it's a lot of money, but I have to be frank with you and the audience. I want to say that this will bring problems and more crises to the citizens of Israel, but it's not the main crisis in Israel. We can see now this cost of the new campaign and the election will make the crisis wider from one side and deeper from other side. It means that we are already in the crisis, and the election will bring more problems and to make this crisis wider and deeper. Everybody, that the election, this the fourth one in less than 2 years, is out of the complicated crisis politically, economically, and the health and the corruption crisis in Israel. It's a reflex of this crisis. There is a new phenomena of this fourth election, different than the last three elections. In the last three elections, the main discussion were between the right-wing parties, Netanyahu and the Likud, and from the other side, the center and left forces and parties in, for example, Gantz and the Labour Party and the Meretz and the Common List in the Arab side. But this election is not between these two forces, the right and the, from one side, and the center left in the other side. Now the discussion, the main fight is between the right parties from the other side, other right parties, between the right parties together. And this is a new phenomena, wasn't in all the history of Israel from the first election on 1949 till now.
On social media, the conversation was tense. Philippe says, now Israeli elections coming up and have to watch all this over recharge stuff again. Likud will win again. Benjamin says he's Israeli. The elections are not a big deal. Netanyahu is facing elections also. It's all a ploy. Yona says, Israeli elections are almost officially back for the fourth time in 2 years. Preliminary date of March 16 set. This is the timing Blue and White wanted, and not later in the spring post-vaccination that Likud wanted. Though not clear, Blue and White will do any better.
should be quite clear that the Israeli economy is going to pay, and is already paying, a very heavy price for having a fourth election in 2 years. But what many people overlook is the moral, psychological, and the motivational damage that is being caused. Because there's a large number of people from the Israeli middle class, and it doesn't really matter if it's center-left or center-right, who still believe that Israel is a Western, democratic, Zionist, normal state. And they still believe in the institutions of this state. And what they are discovering, or will discover, is that on top of the pyramid sits a man who will do everything in his ability to remain in power and will subvert the economic and political and justice system of the country. He will undermine it to achieve his goal. At the moment, Israel's debt lies at 14.5% of its GDP. Unemployment is at 20%. Poverty is at 29%. Israelis don't need new elections at this time that will cost $400 million. What they need is good governance, and they need a budget, because there hasn't been a budget for 2020, nor for 2021. Nevertheless, elections are being held, and that is due to Benjamin Netanyahu's insistence on having a one-year budget plan. Netanyahu insisted on having a one-year budget plan, although he agreed to have a two-year budget plan earlier, because he wanted to have absolute control over the situation.
Israelis are upset about this because, according to KAN, the same troublemakers and lawmakers and officials in the Israeli cabinet and Knesset who are calling for a fourth election are the ones who benefit and are in some way rewarded for such political standoffs. And now they're going to get a reward for trying to convince Israelis to pick them again using their own tax money. Many of the members in the Knesset and the cabinet have been there running for their seats since the first election out of three seemingly failed ones. Israelis have lost confidence in them. It seems that no matter how much money is spent on their campaigns and how much fiscal funding they receive courtesy of Israeli taxpayers, they can't even pass a budget that will allow Israelis and Israel in general to function. Israelis believe that this is what the regime wanted. A fourth election looms because it is the only mechanism available to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to call new elections. For Netanyahu, a fourth race in under 2 years would have him not cede his office in November 2021 to his rival-turned-partner, Military Minister Benny Gantz. Netanyahu and Gantz have been circling each other for months. Netanyahu has been seeking to escape the clauses of his coalition agreement. Gantz has been struggling to hold him to it, and the budget has served as the main leverage in that fight. This leaves the Israeli public to be the outcast in all of this while they bear the biggest brunt. Hence, protesters, which are at their 28th week of protests, are calling for the downfall of the regime simply because they have had enough.
It means the mass of the citizens of Israel are the main loser. But if we take it in the between parties and politically, we can see that Gantz and the Labour Party, it means the center and left, who were inside the coalition government, they will be the main loser as the political parties. The second loser will be Netanyahu himself, not the right wing as a political platform, but as struggle against the corruption of Netanyahu. You know, and everybody knows that he is facing three corruption cases in the court. They didn't reach to this budget because they know that the budget must bring a new hard decisions against the most of the citizens and the businesses out of the situation. They connect that with the political crisis in Israel and with the personal crisis of Netanyahu himself toward the corruption cases which he faced this time. For this reason, the budget issue is a symptom of the deep and wide, multiple and complicated crisis which Israel is facing. This complicated crisis in Israel since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 wasn't in this thing. But there is some of a part of this crisis were something the same. I want to remember, let's remember together, for example, if we are talking about the political crisis, we saw a political crisis before, like what was in Barak on 1999 in Camp David. And it was a big political crisis in that time that will was it was in Israel. If we are talking about the economical crisis, we can see two main crises in the history in economics. One, it was in 1985, and the second in 2008.
On social media, the conversation was tense. Classical Lib asks, how many ex-Likudniks have created a new party because Bibi pushed them out? 10 or something like that, right? Noah says, Israel needs a new party, but not with the same old collection of egomaniacs. Michael jokingly says, due to the directives against large gatherings, maybe there should be a directive that no political party can have more than 10 candidates.
Government don't care about the citizens in Israel, and we feel all the corruption in the government taking us down. And Israel is a proud country. We are a proud people who try to save our free and democratic only country in the Middle East. And because of this, the people of Israel is arising against the government.
What took place within the Israeli parliament most recently was that there was a vote to postpone reaching a decision regarding the budget. And while historically and most recently there's been a very strong opposition to Prime Minister Netanyahu from the center and from the left, now there's been a rebellion from the right, and there were members of the ruling Likud party, of all parties, who actually quit and either joined a new party, or people from the right who were surprised by voting against to the proposition. And that is, this is what is enabling a fourth election. So in fact, there is a growing number of people who believe that they can unseat Netanyahu and remove him, and believe that they could serve as better prime ministers. And it is their personal drive that is causing Israel to go for a fourth election. The reason elections are being held on such a frequent basis in Israel is due to the fact that there isn't a clear consensus. Israeli society is deeply fragmented and divided. Various political parties are pushing in various different directions. Due to the fact that Israel is a so-called democracy, because it's democracy for Jews only, but it's a parliamentary democracy, various parties can pull out when they wish and therefore bring down the coalition once the majority is not secured. And that gives increasing power to smaller political parties. The polarization within Israel is getting stronger and deeper, and elections are therefore being held on a more frequent basis as various parties and figures split, and even within these splits, there are various new splits.
To make matters even worse, in a recent speech, Israeli military minister Benny Gantz told Israelis on live national TV that he knew Netanyahu is a serial promise breaker, and that Netanyahu lied to Israelis and did not lie to Benny Gantz, even though he formed a coalition with him. So-called Knesset opposition leader Yair Lapid said citizens shared the feeling that they lost control over their lives. The lack of budget for 2020 has contributed to hardships and cutbacks for Israelis, amid unemployment estimated at over 20%. It seems that as the new year looms, so does another election for Israel. The same parties and the same players are on the table. The only thing new would be the money that would have went to a 2020 budget. Now, it remains to be seen if a budget would ever get passed. This, all the while Israelis suffer. Here is the news making the press in Israel. Ynet News. Israel's malls warn they will not close during new coronavirus restrictions. The operators of Israel's malls said that they would not close their doors again if instructed to do so, as part of tighter measures to reduce the rising coronavirus infection rate. Haaretz. Ministries will be forced to cut their budgets in January by about a quarter of planned levels, a total of 10 billion shekels or $3.1 billion, bringing many regime activities to a standstill, an analysis by the finance ministry's accountant general has found. I-24 News. A survey released shows that more than a quarter of a million Israeli households have fallen below the poverty line since the start of the lockdown responses to the pandemic, an increase of almost 50%. According to the welfare charity Leitet, which also provides meal services throughout Israel, approximately 3 in 10 Israelis, 29.3%, live in poverty, which equates to 850,000 households. That figure represents more than a 9% year-on-year increase, 20.1%. The Jerusalem Post. Some 63% of Israelis plan on being vaccinated against the coronavirus, but only 24% of them plan on getting the vaccine immediately, a new poll published by Ynet News has found. One possible explanation for the relatively low number of Israelis willing to be vaccinated immediately is the public's opinion of the safety of the vaccine. Some 23% of Israelis don't know if the vaccine is safe, 17% think it is not safe, and 6% are sure it is not safe, according to the Ynet poll.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.